Hey y'all, it's Susan Darrow, your host of Border Radio right here on KPFD. I hope you'll join me for Border Radio Monday through Friday mornings from 9:30 to noon on KPFD Houston.
That sweet beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch. You know, it chimes in, and you know you have tuned into So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling. And it's found only on Houston's community station, HD1 KPFT. That's member-supported KPFT, and you know we couldn't be here celebrating the power of story without your gracious and generous support. Now, the reason that you've tuned in to hear us tonight, as every night on this show, great stories. And tonight, I'm pleased as can be to welcome Colorado-based storyteller Pam Farrow. Now, she's been a professional storyteller for only 35 years, performing and teaching throughout the West, across the U.S., and overseas. Her performance repertoire includes original retellings of traditional folk tales and fairy tales, Spanish, English, bilingual cuentos, that's our new word for tonight, cuentos, biblical, sacred, interfaith storytelling, and true life stories, including the true story of her great uncle who survived the Titanic. Not sure we'll hear that tale tonight, but if not, we'll find out where we can get more info on that. Now, with both the feet in both worlds of secular and traditional storytelling and biblical sacred storytelling, Pam has given workshops, keynotes, performances at schools, libraries, churches, universities, festival stages, tent meetings. Well, I kind of made that one up there. Maybe some backyard barbecues. That's what we do around here in Texas. And including the National Storytelling Festival Exchange Place. Pam Farrow, how the heck are you? Are you excited to be sharing stories with our listeners tonight?
Oh, thanks, Larry. I'm great. I'm real excited to be here. I'm really delighted at the invitation. Thanks.
There's nothing better than telling stories.
Nope. Other than maybe listening to stories.
Maybe listening to stories. We never know exactly who our audience is out there in their cars or on their couches, right, or in the beach. You know, we could be anywhere, this thing, you can listen live. So you never know what's happening with them, but we hope they'll take a moment and tune in and hear you. Now, we are just getting acquainted, but we have a lot of mutual friends in the storytelling community. So I take a fantastic opportunity that we have to get you here this evening. It took a little while to get us locked in. Your first story tonight is, you said it's a Spanish-English tale, and the reason I know that is because of the name. Now, people who are normally listening to me as the host know I have trouble with big words. These are big words in foreign language. Pedro E. El Diablo. And yep, that probably translates to Peter and the Devil. That's what, yep, I would say.
Yeah, right, you got it.
Well, let's hear Pedro E. El Diablo.
Great. Thanks, Larry. Hace muchos años, a long time ago, there lived two friends. Now, one of these men was named Pedro. Pedro, maybe you know, is how you say the name Peter in Spanish. And he was called Pedro instead of Peter because, well, where he lived, everybody spoke Spanish. And Pedro's friend was named, well, I can't really tell you what his name was because, you see, he'd been called by his nickname for so long, nobody could remember what his real given name was. I can tell you about his nickname, though. He got it when he was about 7 years old. You see, he was muy, muy travieso. Really mischievous. Anytime anybody played a trick on a neighbor or a teacher, you could bet that this kid was at the bottom of it. But he had a talent. He had a talent for getting his friends and classmates into trouble, and he wouldn't get into any trouble at all. So they all started to call him El Diablito. Yeah, that's Spanish for the little devil. Right. So El Diablito, he kept doing this all the way through elementary school, middle school, high school, till now as an adult, he was still getting his friends into trouble. But they didn't call him El Diablito anymore. They just called him El Diablo, plain and simple. The devil. So one day, El Diablo came up to his friend and he said, "Hey, Pedro, has visto? Have you seen? Las manzanas, those apples on old man Martinez's tree are ripe and ready to be picked and eaten. Let's go there tonight and steal us some." But Pedro said, "No, no quiero. I don't want to. Él tiene ese perro bravo. I don't want that dog to take a bite out of my leg." "No te preocupas. Don't you worry. He keeps that dog locked up at night. We'll be okay. Nos vamos, eh?" And Pedro agreed. So that night, the two men met in the moonlight, just a ways down the road from old man Martinez's place. They had with them a sack to collect those apples in. And when they got to that apple tree, oh, those apples smelled so sweet and ripe. Their mouths began watering. They began to pick those apples one by one, pretty soon two by two. And before long, their sack was filled. Well, they picked it up, and I'm pretty sure Pedro was the one to carry it. And they went down the road a bit. But then Pedro stopped and turned to his friend, and he said, "Hey, Diablo, ¿a dónde vamos? We need to go somewhere where we can divide up these apples where nobody will see us, huh?" "Oh, yo sé," he said. "I know where we can go. Vamos al cementerio. Yeah, let's go to the cemetery. Nobody will bother us there." Well, he was right. That old graveyard was at the far edge of town. Only one road went by it. Nobody would bother them there. When they got there, it was surrounded by a low adobe wall, so they walked in through the gate, walked all the way around the inside of the wall, sat down, dumped the apples out of the sack, gathered the rolling apples together, and began to divide those apples up like this: "Una para Pedro, una para el Diablo. One for Pedro, one for el Diablo." And so on. Now, what you need to know is there were two other men out that night. And I am sorry to say that they had just been going from cantina to cantina, drinking beer and whiskey until they were muy, muy borracho. They could not walk themselves all the way home. They had gotten just as far as that cemetery wall. They had sat down, leaned up against the outside of the wall, and there they had fallen dead asleep. And they were sleeping right on the outside of the wall from where Pedro y el Diablo were inside. Now, one of those sleeping men on the outside was large and round. His sleeping friend wasn't large at all. No, he was very thin and old and dry. Yeah, kind of wrinkled and dried up, withered looking is how he looked. And that thin man woke up first. And he looked all around and he heard voices coming from over the cemetery wall behind them. And he heard one of the voices saying, "Una para Pedro, una para el diablo." One for Peter, one for the devil. And that thin man turned to his sleeping friend, grabbed him by the collar, and said, "Despierta! And listen! Saint Peter and the devil are dividing up the souls of the dead in the cemetery!" And his large friend listened, and he too heard, "Una para Pedro, una para el diablo." One for Peter, one for the devil. And those two men sat as if rooted to that very spot. Then they heard one of the voices say, "Eso es todo, Pedro. That's all." "No, no. What's that all, Diablo? Look over there by the wall." You see, when the two men had been gathering those rolling apples on the inside of the wall, they had missed two of the apples that had rolled and were nestled now at the inside base of the wall. Now, one of those apples they were looking at was very large and round. The other apple was very dry and withered. "Oh, yeah, I see those two over by the wall. Pedro, you can have the large round one. I'll take the dry withered up one." "No, no, Diablo. Neither one of them looks any good to me. You can have them both." And at that, both of the men on the outside leaped to their feet. They ran all the way to their homes. They shut their doors and windows against the night. And from that night on, they spent every evening with their families and never touched a drop of beer or whiskey again.
That is just wrong. That is just wrong. Wait, so one was Panzón and the other was Flaca. Wait, Flaco.
Eso. Claro que sí.
Now, hold on a second, because you are a Midwest girl who's been living 40 years in Colorado. What draws you to cuentos or bilingual stories?
A couple of things quickly. First of all, I lived for a time in Ecuador, so that's where I learned my Spanish.
Oh, gotcha.
I had to go shopping, take the bus, make friends.
Immersion. That's immersion. Yeah.
So I sometimes have been told I have an Ecuadorian accent, and that has adjusted over the years, though, of living in Colorado, where I live in an area that there's a lot of bilingualism here. A lot of people speak Spanish here. So when I started my storytelling 35 years ago, I made the conscious decision to see if that would work for me to tell some stories
incorporate
bilingually.
Those.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I make no bones about it. I am primarily an English speaker. I'm really not fluent in Spanish, but I'm conversant. So I feel like I model being an English speaker who values and has learned enough Spanish to have enjoyment with it and communicate with it and use it in some stories.
Now, who is the typical audience for that story? Is that you know, late teen audiences, adult audiences, is that young kids? And you just pull that out anytime in front of any crowd.
I find this story works well down through about maybe third grade. If I'm telling to a primary school, primary grades audience, I wouldn't usually choose that particular story to tell. But from about third grade on up, certainly from fifth or sixth grade on up,
right,
through adults, it works really well. And as you do, you adapt it some to the audience in front of you.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. See there, folks, that's why you tune in to So What's Your Story? There's a story behind the story we don't often hear. Now, I mentioned in the intro, I pretty much mentioned everything except who I am, I think. I'm Larry, of course, and they know my voice. But I mentioned that you've told stories all over the place, and you tell stories all over. This next story is coming from coal country. Now, when I think coal country, I think of Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, those places like that. Did we hit it on the mark there, or is this a different coal country?
No, around West Virginia and Appalachia.
All right, now tell us about this story. Tell us what the title is, and let's hear this next one.
Well, it does have a title that I did not make up because this is actually originally a literary story, a short story written by Jane Mickelson. I came across it decades ago. I loved it. And when I started storytelling, I found myself wanting to try to give an oral telling of this beautiful short story. And I contacted the author, and Jane Mickelson was gracious and generous enough to give me permission to tell the story professionally. So I've done it for many years, but I don't get lots of opportunities to tell it because number one, as we will soon find out, it's one of my longer stories, and not every occasion welcomes or allows for that. And also it's a story that I also don't tell to very young listeners generally, although my oldest son tells me it's been his favorite story ever since he was in grade school. I live in Colorado now, but I was born in Indiana, which is right next door to Kentucky. And so it's natural for me sometimes when I tell this story, my mouth, you can hear it already, is starting to slide just a little bit because the story calls for it. And it's a little bit in my genes as well, perhaps. So are you ready for Won't You Come and Sing for Me by Jane Mickelson originally? All right, then. Lucine Radley. Well, she was the daughter of a coal miner. And being the daughter of a coal miner, no one was surprised when it came time for Lucine to choose herself a man. No one was surprised that she chose someone with coal dust under his fingernails. What did surprise him, though, was the man she chose. Wild Grady Fowler. Grady Fowler was known up and down the valley as the drinkinest, the cussinest, the wenchinest son of a moonshiner you'd ever want to see. Lucine's mama nearly cried her eyes out over this, but Lucine was born determined. Lucine would have Grady Fowler or nobody. Now, let me tell you a little bit more about Lucine. Well, she had an angel's voice, and when she raised it to praise the Lord at the Pine County Baptist Church on Sundays, why, the handkerchiefs fluttered like a field of butterflies in July. It was so beautiful. But as for beauty, well, now, Lucine's was more on the inside than on the outside. Nothing wrong or amiss. No, she was just a small, plain, brown-eyed woman. And what's more, she knew that Grady Fowler had been taking his handsome face into town to see Wilton Roy's rich lady daughter. Now, she had golden curls and bluebell eyes, and, well, Lucy knew she had to come up with something, maybe to sort of compete against those golden curls and bluebell eyes. But Lucine was born patient. And before too long, something came along that seemed an answer to Lucine's prayers and patience. You see, a fever hit the valley. Oh, not a terrible one like smallpox or the measles, no. But one that just sort of seemed to hunt out those that were living too high and praying too low. And when Lucine heard that Grady Fowler had been stricken, why, she packed up her basket with red oak bark tea and calf's foot jelly, and she went up the valley to his home. Now, Grady's mama was delighted to find Lucine standing on her doorway. She had seven others younger than Grady to take care of, so she was fine inviting Lucine in to help take care of her wayward son. And would you believe that between the dosing and the soothing and the soft, sweet songs of that small brown-eyed woman? Well, by the time Wilton Roy's rich lady daughter even heard that Grady was ailing, he'd plumb forgot all about golden curls, and bluebell eyes. And before long, the good folks at the Pine County Church stood up to hear the banns read that Lucene Radley and Grady Fowler were engaged to be married. Now, after the time passed, they did get married, and Grady Fowler, why, his good old friends noticed that he wasn't coming up to the still or down into town with them like he used to. Even Lucene's mama marveled at the gentleman of Grady Fowler. He'd built a cabin for Lucene just a mile up the creek from her mom and daddy, so she wouldn't have to be alone all the time, all day, when he was down in the mines. Now, a miner's wife learns to pray early, and she starts each day about that time he walks out the door in the morning and says amen when he walks back in at the end of the shift. And if that mine whistle ever blows at the wrong time of day, she hopes to heaven that her man is safe in another part of the mine. Well, the day that whistle blew for Grady Fowler, some folks say they saw a flash of lightning in a clear blue sky. Some folks say the mine was so badly caved in they didn't know they'd get to him. And they didn't know how to tell Lucene that her man was gone. So they went and told her mom and daddy instead. Told them, too, how, yes, indeed, that mine was so caved in they couldn't retrieve the body. Told them, too, how they would ring the church bell 26 times, once for each year of his young life. And I tell you, that was the longest mile Lucene's daddy ever walked that day, when he went up to her cabin. But when he got there, she was already gone. And little Grady's cradle. You see, by that time, they'd had little Grady come along to fill out their happy family. And Lucene's daddy saw his little cradle was still rocking, but empty. You see, Lucene had scooped him up and had left. Because high in the hills, there was an old widow woman. Folks would see her going around and collecting her roots and herbs and saying things and singing things. And some folks said she was a conjure woman. Some folks said she could conjure up the devil himself for the right price. And the price that night was Lucene's wedding band and a lock of little Grady's hair. Now that old woman, she set Lucene down in a rocking chair, tucked Grady in a little truckle bed, and she closed all the shutters in a cabin, and she lit a single candle and set it down right in the middle of her floor. And she threw the foulest smelling herbs Lucene had ever heard right into the flame, and she threw back her head and sang and chanted louder and louder until her eyes rolled back into her head. And when she was done, there was the devil himself sitting on a little three-legged stool and surrounded by all his little imps and demons of hell. Well, Lucy wasted no time. She stood right up. She folded her hands on her apron and she said, "Oh, devil, I have called you here because I just know that you've taken my beloved Grady, and I'm not going to sit here and let you take him, not before his time, not before he's found grace in the eyes of the Lord." And that old devil just stroked his chin whiskers and smiled. "Well, now, I have called you here to propose." And that old devil leaned forward. "Yes, I have called you here to propose a bargain." And at that old devil leaned back his head and laughed and laughed and laughed. "And just what did you have in mind, little lady?" "Well, now," she said, "it was singing that won me Grady's love. And so it's singing that I'm hoping and praying that will help save his soul as well. I propose that we have a singing contest." Lean forward more. "All right. All right. All right, then. But I go first, and I set the rules. And it's this: if you can move my imps of hell to tears greater than I can rouse them to cheers, you'll get your man back." Well, Lucine, she went and settled herself back down in the rocking chair. And that old devil, he started singing. He started singing up a storm. He sang old songs, songs that hadn't been heard for tens of thousands of years. And he sang new songs, songs he made up right there on the spot. He sang funny songs. He sang silly songs. He sang sad songs. He sang frightening songs. He sang songs that would have made Lucine blush if she hadn't been so set on her purpose. He sang soprano, alto, tenor, bass, sometimes all at once. He sang grand opera until all of the chimney lamps in the widow woman's house crumbled into dust. And when he was done with all that singing, those imps and demons of hell were leaping and cheering and yowling and scrowling. It was the loudest sound since the beginning of creation. And after an eternity, that old devil shoved and kicked them all into the corner and told them to shush up. Oh, Lucine, she stood up. And she began singing the most beautiful song she knew. But she stopped after the first stanza because those little imps had started migrating around all around her and were kind of swirling around and looking at her with their eyes and grim looks on their faces. So she tried something else. She started singing the old songs, the ones her grandmama taught her, the ones about white turtle doves and green ivy growing over lovers' graves, enough to bring a tear to your eye. But not those little demons. No, they were clambering all about, and some of them were standing on top of the kindling and throwing little chips of wood at her. So she changed tack. She started singing, oh, the hymns, those beautiful hymns. But one after another, she had to stop midline, it seemed, because they started screaming and yelling and howling and shaking their pointy little tails right at her. And Lucine, well, she began to realize just how hard a bargain she'd taken on. Oh, and then she thought of one more song, one that her mama said always made her cry. So she opened her mouth, but all that came out was just a kind of little croak. It seemed she had lost her voice. And she knew that she had lost the bargain as well. And just then, another song filled the air, it seemed. And she looked, and little Grady over in his truckle bed had woken up, and he was singing out his hunger. In three steps, his mama was at his side. Without a thought in her mind or heart for anything else, she took her babe to the rocking chair. She sat down, and she started rocking and comforting her babe. And as she did, well, a little song rose to her lips. Despite the catch in her throat, the song came. Bye, oh baby. Bye, oh baby, bye. Oh, bye. Bye, oh baby. Bye, oh baby, bye. Oh, bye. The words didn't say much. You know, babies read feelings more than words. It was a kind of song a mama's just got to sing when her heart is so full of love, it just has to take form. And when she was done, she saw that all those little imps and demons had gathered close round her rocking chair and were looking up at her with their big old eyes full of tears, as silent as sleeping kittens. But then they turned as one to their old daddy and they said, "Where's our mama?" Lucine almost felt sorry for them. But that old devil, he had seen that he had lost, and he was mad. And he stood up and he grabbed a burlap sack and he started stuffing those imps and demons inside, still blubbering and howling. And he slung that sack over his shoulder and he looked right at Lucine and he said, "Madam, you have won your wager. When you get home, you'll find your man fit sitting the kitchen table, just waiting for his supper." Devil disappeared in a cloud of, yes, sulphurous smoke. Well, now, some folks say that Grady Fowler was just too tough to die. Some folks say that he's so tough he managed to tunnel himself out the back of the mine. Lean knows the truth of it. And every time, from that day forward, whenever she held a young one to her for comforting, a smile would play on her lips, and she would give thanks for the gift which had twice won her man.
Fantastic. Boy, now there you go, folks. That voice you've been listening to is intoned by Pam Farrow, coming to us from Colorado tonight. I'm Larry Thompson, and you're listening to So What's Your Story, HD1 KPFT 90.1 Houston's community station, 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 in Huntsville. Don't forget KPFT's free internet on HD2 to meet your news, arts, and entertainment needs. We are so proud to be here because just as KPFT is Houston's community station, So What's Your Story is Houston's community show. Now you tune in and listen to us on your phone or your tablet or your radio driving in traffic. You want to hear the finest and widest variety of programming. That's why you're on KPFT. And hearing great stories is why you're listening to our show tonight. Now, Pam, that is a fantastic story that comes from a short story. Do you get the feeling that anyone out there listening to us tonight could be a storyteller?
Oh, absolutely. It's way more than a feeling, Larry. It's a firm knowledge that absolutely everybody is a storyteller. Now, it's true. Storytelling is both an art form that is practiced and honed by committed people, professionals, etc. No question about it, like any art. But it is also a deeply human and accessible endeavor that has been, some people would claim, maybe humanity's oldest art form. I'm sure there's research and debate about that. But in any case, it is across the globe something that is practiced by people. And I like to make the comparison sometimes with, say, cooking. So, yeah, we all know there are gourmet chefs. There are
chefs.
Professional cooks. You might, rate them on a scale or you might not. You just, but everybody has some capacity. Now, I know people will say, I can't boil an egg, but everybody can do something, maybe even wonderful, with a peanut butter sandwich or apples and peanut butter, or, we can all do something to nourish ourselves for sure. Well, there's not much that is as nourishing to the human spirit as stories.
And I like that word, accessible.
Everyone.
That pretty much sums it up there. And that brings us right up to one of our fabulous sponsors, the Houston Storytelling Guild. That's a great place to learn about the art of storytelling. And you meet the people who are Houston storytellers and folks who just come to town and want to share a story. Now, they also meet virtually on the fourth Tuesday of every month. The next swap is in a couple of weeks. Visit their guild website, HoustonStorytellers.org. They're going to have the link. They're going to have all the information for their programming. And they have these programs, So What's Your Story, stored out there forever. Shows since 2008. You can find them and listen to them there. Now, for more live storytelling, let's talk back to Pam right here. Your next story is simply called Toby, and that tells me that it might be a personal story for you. Is that accurate?
Yes, it's a life story. It's something that happened to me, and I have found is worth sharing.
There you go. So. Well, let's hear Toby.
All right, thank you. I remember looking up and seeing those beautiful colors and ornaments and icicles on that Christmas tree. I wasn't quite six. My birthday's in January. It was Christmas Eve, and the fire was going in the fireplace, and Mom had gone to the kitchen to, well, she said she was going to get us some hot chocolate. So I was still there with my dad and my three older siblings. And all of a sudden, my big sister gave a scream, and we turned around, and there was Mommy standing in the doorway with the cutest puppy on the planet in her arms. It was this little tricolored curly haired, and I learned it was a wired haired fox terrier, the cutest little puppy with a big red bow around its neck and a little tag on it that said Sir Toby of Buckingham. We lived on Buckingham Drive in Indianapolis. And Toby, well, my family, I was born into a family with dogs. I'm the youngest of four kids. There had been dogs in the family long before me, but we were currently without a dog. And so it was wonderful to have this new puppy. And like most new puppies, Toby, was not allowed in every room of the house. You know about house training. So we didn't want him in the carpeted rooms. I didn't care. Mom didn't want him in the carpeted rooms. He didn't want him on a room that we had a nice wooden floor on. So the kitchen was a safe place for Toby. We closed the swinging door between the kitchen and the carpeted dining room. But between the kitchen and the family room, there wasn't a door to close. There was just an open doorway. And this was a problem because the family room had a nice wooden parquet floor that my mom didn't want a little puppy to do you know what on. So what to do? Well, my parents were serious bridge players. They belonged to a bridge club, sometimes hosted it. So they had a pair of serious bridge tables, card tables, nice sturdy wood with leather inlaid top. And so mom took one of those nice heavy card tables. It was just the right width, set it across the doorway between the kitchen and the family room. And we would have to move it aside to go in and out, to keep Toby off of the wooden floor. Well, one day, I was six by now, and I was in the family room. I'd been coloring. I loved to color, still do. And when I was done, I'm sure I put everything away, right? And then I went over to that card table, which, came up to about my shoulders. And I looked over it, and there was Toby. Hi, Toby. And so I grabbed hold of that card table and started moving it so I could edge around the side and put it back in place. But that serious wooden card table fell out of my 6-year-old fingers and right down onto Toby. And Toby started yelping and screaming and yelling. And I started screaming, and Mom, Mommy, Mom. And so my mom and my brother Mark came running down the stairs, and they came and they helped me get that heavy card table off of Toby. And then, well, I remember sitting in the back seat of the car as we took Toby to the vet. And I remember that Toby was taken to the vet additional times. And well, it wasn't long after that that Toby died. But 13 years later, I was home from college on some break and was sitting at the kitchen table, different kitchen, different house, different city by this time. But I was sitting at that kitchen table with my mom and with my older sister, who happened to be home as well. And our old dog, Peppy, was with us there, and we were petting Peppy. And our conversation turned to dogs our family had had. Well, of course, my sister, being much older than I, she and mom were talking about dogs that were part of the family before I ever came along. And then conversation turned to Gypsy. Oh, I remember Gypsy. We had her sweet little black and white pit bull. Yes, I used her as a pillow. And then talked about Kim. And then the conversation turned to Toby, and I got real quiet. And I remember Mom said, "Toby, what a cute puppy. What a shame that he caught distemper and died." And just like that, 13 years of guilt fell off my shoulders. And when Mom found out, as I told her at that kitchen table, when she found out that she'd never made it clear to me the cause of Toby's death, and all those years, I thought I had killed my puppy. Well, I'm sorry to say Mom carried the guilt ever since. Now, I'm not into guilt, but I asked Mom if it was okay to end the story that way, and she said yes.
Fantastic. Boy, you had us all going there. We'd have been like those imps and little demons. We were just tears rolling down our face. And then redemption right at the end. I love when redemption gets pulled out right at the end. Now, speaking of redemption, you also, I think I mentioned this in the beginning, you tell interfaith stories as well. Now, what is it that attracts you to those stories?
Well, I went and decided to go to grad school, and I got my Master of Divinity degree at Iliff School of Theology in Denver, which is a progressive Methodist school of theology. I'm Lutheran, but I went there. And I started my course of study on September 10th, 2001.
Oh, gosh.
So my entire theological education was in the immediate aftermath of 9/11.
Sure.
And as you might only begin to imagine, that whole education, if you will, was filled with interfaith conversation, communication, understanding, trying to make connections, et cetera, et cetera. And as a storyteller, which I had already been by many years, and was always a focus of my theological work there, my storytelling, well, we all know that wonderful saying, the shortest distance between two people is a story. I'm also finding that the shortest distance between two cultures, two faith traditions, etc., is also often story, where we both learn and connect with the similarities that are there, and hear and learn about and learn to at least recognize, if not outright appreciate, some of the differences that are there.
Well, and there's that word accessible again. It becomes more accessible to learn about someone else through the form of a story than it would be just to sit in the back of a room at a lecture or listen to the news on TV. That's for sure.
Exactly.
Now, I think we have time for you to share a couple of those examples for us of this interfaith. Now, I have one down here called Mohammed and the Cat. Mm-hmm. So let's hear Mohammed and the Cat.
Right. The Prophet Mohammed, peace be upon him, left the city to go out to the hill in the desert where he was currently teaching. And the people would gather all around as he would sit under the shade of a small palm tree and teach. Well, one day, as he began, he spread out his robes, and he happened to be wearing his finest robe that particular day. As he began, a small cat came creeping up towards him. The cat was small and thin and sickly. And as the prophet spoke, the cat curled up in the soft edge of the finest of the prophet's robes and slept in the shade of that palm tree to rest and to heal in the way that a cat will. Well, the sun climbed higher, as the prophet taught, and it was time where people would open up their bundles and baskets and shared food with each other. And the day continued and the teaching continued, and the cat continued to sleep. And the sun continued to move westward, and it grew lower and lower in the sky. And the cat continued to sleep. As the sun was nearing the horizon, it was time for the prophet to bring the day's teaching to a close and for everyone to return home. But the cat continued to sleep. The people picked up their bundles and baskets and headed back into the city and out to their villages. The prophet looked down at the sleeping cat. From his own bundle, he drew out a long, gleaming, sharp knife, and most deliberately, he cut the edge of the finest of his robes to leave a soft bed for the cat, who still slept and rested and healed as a cat will.
Fantastic. Now, let's do one more. This one is, now I'm going to mess this up. Do you say Brahma like we do for the bulls, or you say Brahma?
Brahma.
Mm-hmm. Brahma's tears. Now, if we said it around here, it'd be Brahma, and I ain't never seen a Brahma cry. So I'm very interested in this one from this perspective, Brahma's tears.
Thank you, Larry. This one comes from the Hindu tradition, and a simplistic way, an easy way to have a misperception about Hinduism is that, oh, they have hundreds of different gods. But the little bit of learning I've been privileged to have with some Hindu people, it really isn't. What they call separate gods are actually separate manifestations or separate ways of understanding or reaching the Almighty God. So it's not terribly unlike what the Christian faith calls the triune God, the Trinity, except there just happens to be hundreds. In any case, that's a little bit of background where Brahma is often considered, to put it simply, shorthand, as sort of the chief of the gods. Well, one day, Hanuman, one of the lesser gods, was going down the road and came upon Brahma, who was weeping. And Hanuman said, "Oh, my Lord Brahma, why are you weeping?" And Brahma held back his tears a moment, and he said to Hanuman, "Oh, I was holding the most beautiful jewel, the jewel of wisdom. Oh, I was holding it, and I dropped it, and it fell to earth and broke into countless pieces." And he began to weep even more so that he could not speak. And Hanuman said, "Oh, I understand, my Lord Brahma. Yes, a beautiful jewel of wisdom breaking into countless pieces. Mm-hmm, what a loss. I understand why you were crying." "No, no, you don't understand," Brahma went on. "I am crying because all of those pieces were picked up, and everyone who held a piece of that jewel of wisdom thought that they held the only piece."
How about that?
I find that a cause for tears if everyone thinks they hold the only piece of wisdom.
They hold the only piece, and appropriate for all we've been through, certainly over the last 4 or 5 years, my goodness. Well, Pam Farrow, thank you so much for being here with us tonight. I hope you've had as much fun telling as we have had listening. Before we go, what is your favorite audience to perform in front of? And you don't have to say KPFT 90.1, but, you know, hopefully we're up there towards the top.
Well, To be honest, in terms of demographics or ages or something like that, that's impossible for me to answer. I don't have one. So a really sort of common sense but profound answer is a receptive audience.
A
People who's,
receptive
yeah, with
audience.
eyes and ears and hearts ready to receive the nourishment and goodness of stories. That's my favorite
Now,
audience.
are you also, you're not a politician and you're in another
I
life
am
right now.
not.
Okay, because
I
that's a
am a
very,
storyteller,
there you
and
go,
that's the
across the
truth.
board.
Yeah.
Well, I'm certainly glad we're able to get together, and I will have you back on. So what's your story in the future? You've got countless tales, I'm sure, to regale us with. Maybe not so many about the devil, but I'm a big
Not
fan
so
of devil
many.
stories. I probably
Oh, that's
was
right. There were two about the devil tonight. Well,
Well, you know,
two.
if you're scoring at home, that's two for the devil, and two, you know, there were two
There
for interface, so we're kind of balanced out,
you
and
go.
then
There you
a
go.
dog story. So, you know, we've touched all the bases, but
Well,
we're wrapping up here this evening, and I just hope that everyone has enjoyed the opportunity to hear stories tonight. But don't leave us behind. Stay right here on KPFT for all of our fabulous programming that's coming up next. Don't forget you're listening to member-supported programming on HD1, Houston's community station, KPFT. Make 90.1 part of every day. This is Larry Thompson, along with the rest of the team. I thank you for listening, and remember, it's never too late to start living happily ever after.
Saturdays, 10 a.m., no expectations.
Old time.
The chocolate Jesus.
Still gets all star joint. Got a jukebox.
Holy, I'm falling.
Good trip, sitting on my grocery.
Wives and daughters hide the groceries too. Greatness.
Just go home.
Tune in Saturdays at 10 a.m. with No Expectations on KPFT.
KPFT has a brand new call-in talk show with you in mind. This is You Talk. Sometimes fun.
We're going to have some fun because that's what we're supposed to be here for.
Sometimes controversial.
We had a great fascist government here for almost 4 years. It had a chance to prove itself and then unexpectedly lost an election, which is still up for debate.
Always entertaining and relevant.
And that's what we're about, by the way, stirring things up, opening new conversations. And that's one of the ones we're having right now.
Give us a call. Let us know what you think. The letter U, then talk with Steve Hunter, Monday through Friday, 8 to 9 a.m. here on KPFT.
Listening to your favorite KPFT program could not be easier. Online at kpft.org through your smart speaker, Alexa, or Google Assistant. And now, over the air at 90.1 FM and 90.1 HD2, Houston's community station, KPFT.
Your daughter doesn't want to talk about why her room is a horrible mess. Your son doesn't want to talk about why he's wearing mismatching socks. Your spouse doesn't want to talk about their bad haircut. Families don't have to talk about everything, but they should talk to plan for an emergency. Pack basic supplies in a go bag, water, canned food, flashlights, batteries, medical supplies, IDs, and some cash. Talk about where you'll meet in case you lose one another. And of course, don't forget to pack the dog treats. Talk to your family and make an emergency plan. Go to nyc.gov/readyny or call 311 to make your family's emergency plan. brought to you by New York City Emergency Management and the